Well, hi, everybody. My name is Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. It's September 5th, 2 days after Labor Day, and I think we're used to the fact that the week started a bit late. It is Wednesday today. Let's see if we can get this music off. It should have not doing anything there. Let's see. There we go. I knew it would stop eventually. The click-through didn't work. Hey, welcome to today's show, which is a very good show. We have a very fine, internationally recognized educator, okay, named Kathleen Peterson with us, who brought her to me. It was Waterford Institute. And we're going to talk about why early childhood education is so important to America. And I want to make the point, this is through the eyes, not only of an early childhood educator, but a elementary school principal who won awards, NAESP, National Distinguished Principal, okay? So we're talking about someone who sees the effect of good early childhood education on kids in elementary school. And with her, we've got my old friend Ann Brown, who's here quite often when Waterford supplies me with these wonderful guests. And we'll bring them both on in just a second. I want to make note that we're going to archive the show at education-talkradio.org. That's our website. We put a new schedule up there on Saturdays. Okay, so you can always see what we're doing. Follow us on Twitter. That's over at EduTalkRadio. Facebook is the same. And we'll send you a link to every show so you can see what we're doing. Share it with your friends, et cetera, and your colleagues, whatever. I ask you to go over, although it's the new issue will be up there over the next day or so, to our new magazine, which is Digital Accessibility, Compliance, and Equity in Education, ace-ed.org. And you'll be able to see the new issue, which is absolutely terrific. And a back-to-school issue, so to speak, it'll be up this week, okay, over at ace-ed.org. All right, without further ado, let me bring on, I think they're both calling from Utah. Let's find out, okay? Ann, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here, Larry. Good morning.
Good morning to you. How are you today?
I am awesome.
I'm glad. And do you know it's Wednesday, not Tuesday?
Barely. Barely.
Well,
yeah.
Join the club. Join. Are you in Utah today?
I am in Utah. Yep, I'm in Park City. It's beautiful.
Right. That. Oh, spectacularly beautiful. As a matter of fact, Park City, yep. Utah.
Yeah, just getting the colors to change.
I guess because of the elevation. Boy, that's really early. Wow.
Well, yeah, it's about on time for us. It's about right.
Wow. I didn't know it changed that early. Here they start to change in about 2 or 3 weeks in Maine. Okay, so that's really interesting, but of course you're at a much higher elevation. Well, beautiful Park City, Utah. Is there any place prettier in the world? Kathleen, are you also in Park City today?
I am not. I'm in St. George, Utah, which is down in the bottom of the state.
I've been to St. George, Utah, and I even stated tonight, you're going to love this, Kathleen, in the next town over. I'm going to pronounce it right for you, Hurricane.
You did say it right.
I know. I've been
Were
to
you
Zion
on your way
National
to Zion?
Park. Yeah, I've been to Zion.
Yes.
And was it Bryce right there as well? Is it Bryce? I think it is.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, my God. St. George is really a cool place. And just so you know, I'm sure you do know this, you know, there was that famous movie film there called The Conqueror. Are you familiar with this story?
I'm not.
Well, I'm going to tell you both this story and the whole audience as well. John Wayne, this is a crazy story out of Hollywood, but it's true. John Wayne, of all people, played Genghis Khan in a movie produced by Howard Hughes, and it was called The Conqueror. It was made in the mid-50s, but they went to St. George to film it right after they tested all the atomic bombs in Las Vegas area, and all the wind was blowing east and north. Okay, and literally everyone who worked on that movie wound up getting cancer. Everybody.
Yes, they were
wow.
Downwinders.
Yeah, it's absolutely an incredible story out of Hollywood. They all died. Every actor died of cancer. Okay,
oh,
and I have to tell you something. That the radiation is long gone. St. George is a beautiful town. I'd love it there.
Well, I'm a downwinder also, and I've had cancer.
Right. So I say what you just said. Say what you just said again.
I'm a downwinder. That's what they call the people who were exposed to the fallout from the above ground testing.
I didn't know this.
And I am a downwinder.
Wow. And there's actually a word for this, downwinder.
Mm-hmm. the federal government recognized I believe it was the early 70s that the fallout had caused a lot of cancer, and established a downwinder fund for people who lived here for extended periods of time and died from a specific form of cancer that's on their list.
What a terrible thing to happen to such a lovely, lovely place. And I had no idea that there was actually a group, downwinders, and that's what it's called. Wow, you just taught me something. Thank you. Wow.
I hope that's not the only new thing I teach you today.
Yeah, well, I hope it's not going to be, believe me, but that fascinates me. I had no idea that that had happened. Wow. And St. George, I'll tell you, we drive up, we visit friends in Las Vegas, and we always drive up there to go over to the national parks, et cetera. And it's such a nice town filled with such nice people. Okay, I just love it there. I was there so long ago. You're gonna lie. You're obviously a native, right, Kathleen?
No, I'm not. I moved here in 2000.
In 2000. Okay. Because I was there. I bet you don't even remember this. In the 1980s, when the airport was on one of the buttes.
It just barely moved 2 years ago from that butte.
I know they moved, but so it was still there. And I still remember, I couldn't believe that this little plane came in to fly me to Vegas, as a matter of fact. We were up on top of a butte. The place is so fascinating to me with my East Coast eyes. I just love it there. I just love it there, you downwinder, you.
I love it here, too.
You should love it. I just love the place. Life elevated, as we like to say, and it really is in beautiful St. George, I got to tell you. Kathleen, you have a very distinguished record here. Okay, and when you were you were principal of an elementary school, am I correct?
Of three elementaries in my career, yes.
And I just want to run down this list. You were principal of a national blue ribbon school. You were from Red Books, the magazine America's Best Schools, or you were listed in that? Wow! Congratulations.
Yes, our school was.
Congratulations, Governor's School of Excellence.
You.
Yeah, the IRA, but I think now it's the ILA. It was the International Reading Association. Now it's the International Literacy Association. Principal of the Year, UAEYC Principal of the Year, and NAESP National Distinguished Principal. You have quite an accomplished resume.
Well, thank you.
I mean, I'm very
impressed. It was a fun ride.
I don't think the ride's over. What are you doing these days?
Well, these days I'm just working as a consultant.
Well, it's hardly a just. Okay, you're talking to school districts all over the place?
I've talked to several school districts, yes.
Well, if people want to get in touch with you, how do they do that? Because we're going to prime the pump here. How do people get in touch with you?
They can get in touch with me at my email address, which is inkoiloilgrandma@gmail.com.
Okay, Grandma, what's ink oil mean? Help me.
Yeah, ink oil is an aftercare product for tattoos.
Oh. Real? You are a fascinating lady. I have to tell you this, Kathleen.
She's a renaissance
woman. It doesn't quite fit with
she?
Education.
Wow. I'm very impressed. InkOilGrandma@gmail.com. Get in touch with Kathleen. She's really cool. Okay, this is going to be great. I love this. We're going to talk about the value of early childhood education for children and for America, okay, which if you ask any individual, they will tell you how important it is. But if you ask the whole country, they'll say we can't afford to fund it the way we should, which makes no sense at all. That's why Waterford is there working with school districts all over the country. And tell everybody about Waterford.
Yeah, so Waterford, we're focused on early childhood reading, math, and science, and then actually literacy clear into 12th grade with our curricular program.
Yep.
And we're just making sure that kids are ready for school and, have their are literate and ready for school. That's the best way to say it.
Yeah, they do. And by the way, Waterford, though it is a company, if I may, Waterford Institute, it is an institute. Okay, Dusty, Ben Houston, and everybody there works every day with children, researches every day to bring the best possible products to pre-K 2 in particular, and now with the new Curriculette product, up to 12, grade 12. A great company,
correct.
And I've loved it for a long, long time. Okay, and you guys helped me so much with all these wonderful shows. Okay, you saw it with your own eyes, Kathleen. You're a great principal, okay, when you were doing that. Talk from the heart. Why invest in preschools? Pretend you're running for office, okay, as czar of preschools. Why invest in preschools? Kathleen.
Well, we can choose as America to invest in preschools and ensure children are ready to learn when they enter school, or we can choose to pay for prisons where they end up if they can't read and aren't successful in school.
You know, they both begin with the letters PR, preschool or prison. That should be our bumper sticker.
That's a great bumper sticker, because that's really the choice that we're making. When children enter kindergarten unprepared to learn, they are failures, and they recognize that they are failures from age 5. And they label themselves, and teachers label them, and any number of interventions struggle and have failed to close the gap. But when children enter school ahead of their peers or well prepared for kindergarten, often they become the leaders. And that makes the difference of whether they graduate and are successful later on or whether they drop out and become a burden to society. Putting aside any altruistic or ethical needs, we can look at it practically and say we can pay for preschool or we can pay for prison.
Yeah, and needless to say, what we're doing these days, we have to make sure that every kid has preschool. But I have a question. Okay, I'm going to ask Kathleen this. Kathleen, believe me, I am older than both of you young ladies put together. I can almost guarantee you that. Okay? Maybe not, but I'm older than you, okay? And I started elementary school, let me think for a second, about 1952. Okay? I was born in 47. You can do the math, okay? And so say I was 5 years old when I started, and this was in the city of Philadelphia. Preschool did not exist. It did not exist, and I doubt if it existed pretty much anywhere, all right? Something has changed, all right? Something has changed, and guys like Dusty Houston, the founder of Waterford Institute, figured out that something has changed, okay? Because, when I went to school, and I don't know about you two young ladies, okay, but, we didn't have preschool. We didn't have that option, all right? It didn't even exist, all right? And Kathleen, let me ask you, you were a principal for a long, long time. Over the course of your career, I don't know at the very beginning, but what has changed that made early childhood education so important, not only to the individual child, but to our country? What's changed?
Larry, a number of things have changed, but I think probably the most significant change has been the dynamics of families. Back when you went to school, you probably had a mother that had been in your home most of the day as
exactly.
You grew up.
Yes.
Most children, even in areas that have high priority of families, very few families have a mother that stays home all day with the children as they grow from birth to 5 years old. And so the teachings that were going on in the home when you were growing up are no longer taught in the home because the parents aren't there to teach them. And the difference isn't that parents don't care anymore.
Right.
They just aren't there and don't have the time. By the time they come home from work, they concentrate on the basics of getting the wash done, the meals prepared, the kids ready for bed.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the preparation that you got from your mother or from your father, or from your grandparents, don't exist anymore. The other thing that I think has changed significantly is the equity gap. We have, I grew up, what I realize now is poor, but I didn't know I was poor at the time. And because most of the children that I grew up with and attended the school where I went to school had similar family incomes. now there's a huge gap between the haves and the have-nots. And the children that grow up in affluent families go to preschool because their parents can afford to send them. And they have lots of books in their home, and they have newspapers in their home, and they might eat dinner with their families and develop a large vocabulary with which to work. They may go on vacation and have experiences that their poorer counterparts don't have. Children growing up in poverty homes don't have the experiences. They don't have the reading materials. Their parents don't have the time and sit down and read with them. And so they enter kindergarten often far behind their typical peers. And when that happens, they have so much catching up to do that they see themselves as behind. And they label themselves even before educators label them. And because of that, we have a whole group of children who never catch up.
And you're director of sales over at Waterford. Okay, as you talk to – are you there, Ann?
Yeah, I'm here. Uh-huh.
Okay, as you talk to school districts like I do all over the country, okay, and you heard just now what Kathleen said, okay, from your speaking to everybody across the country, do you agree with what she said? I'm curious to hear your point of view. Ann,
absolutely. You know, what we see is that even parents who are getting some support in the home, often we're just adding more guilt to the parents, you know. So we're saying to them, you need to read to your child. You need to read to your child 20 minutes a day, and there's no books in the home. So they feel bad about that. You know, you need to be, you need to be playing with your child, and they feel bad because they don't have the time because they've got other kids to take care of and you know, food to prepare and all those things. And so what we really try to do at Waterford is our at-home resource, which is called Upstart, is that we put the tool in the home. We put everything there so that the parents have the tool in the home. They have the computer if they need it. They have the internet if they need it. They have everything that they need in order to do it. So we're not just saying do it. We're giving them the tools to do the work
exactly.
with their kids too.
And that's called Waterford, the Upstart program. I've done a number of shows
with them. That's the Waterford Upstart. And Kathy is very familiar with it as well.
In the state of Utah, the legislature offers the Upstart program to all four-year-old children.
Right.
There's a waiting list, so not every child actually gets it. But the children that go through that program and complete it enter kindergarten ahead of their typical peers. And they are starting the process of reading. They have the skills and the basics they need to learn to read, and those children do well beyond kindergarten. Upstart uses an independent evaluator to track those children, and some of those children that started the program are now graduating from high school, and they're doing definitely better than the cohort that did not have Upstart.
Yeah, we actually did move the goalposts closer to the game. The goalposts aren't keep going further away. Excuse me. And didn't mean for that to happen. And you just mentioned Utah, and I should say Waterford's a Utah-based company, okay? But you work in other states as well. Upstart's available across the nation, right?
Yeah, we have about 10 states right now that are participating in Upstart in some way or another. Some of them just did small pilots to kind of prove that it works in different populations.
It works. It works.
Yeah.
They don't have to prove it anymore.
Make sure
it works. It works.
Well, we think that too.
It
but
works.
Everybody wants that, but thank you.
It works.
So we're in urban,
I echo
rural,
that it does.
Deep,
thank
deep
you,
rural, you know, all of those. So, yeah.
You know, and I can't say this enough, and I happen to know, okay, because he's been on the show, et cetera, and I work with you guys so much, is a state senator in Utah who helped to bring this all about. And obviously his colleagues helped. His name's Senator Howard Stevenson, again, a state senator. And we tend, it's election season now, everybody. And, you know, we got primaries going in many states. Massachusetts was yesterday. Okay, there's more coming up, et cetera. But we tend not to put a lot of attention on our state government, maybe for the governor's race, but that's just human nature. We need to find people like Senator Stevenson, okay, who stand up for preschool education, really standing up for all education, and find that powerful senator that makes it happen, that powerful charging horse that leads the whole brigade, okay, and brings it to victory. And I just can't say enough, in this political season, we don't want to lose track. Anybody can mouth words. We have to find the people who will actually stand up and do it. And in Utah, they actually did it. Right, Ann?
Right, yeah. We're the lowest funded per pupil in the country, yet from an education perspective, we spend the least per child, but we have a lot of children here. And we come in at about 20th as far as our scores. So even though we're 50th in spend, we're about 20th in our scores. And you know, a lot of it's due to these early programs that we put a lot of the time and attention onto.
Well, that sums it up in a nutshell. And that's I didn't know you were 50th in the funding, which says even more for the value of preschool. Okay, it's my old cliche line. My old cliche line: you build a good foundation, you don't have to worry too much about the house. Okay, and that's exactly what you're doing. The house eventually grows and takes care of itself. It's the preschool that really matters, I have to tell you. It's just unbelievable. Kathy Peterson, all right? You look at when you look at the skills that the children get, and of course literacy is key. You are a International Literacy Association Principal of the Year. Literacy is key, but there's more to it than just literacy. Okay, because and just talk about that, Kathy. You have seen this, and you have talked to the secondary school principals, seen students grow, etc. The skills, okay. What do the kids learn before kindergarten that they're going to take with them all the way through?
Well, of course, the literacy skills are key to their success in learning to read and reading to learn later on. But as Anne addressed already, Upstart talks to and addresses both the math and the science curriculum. But in addition to that cognitive development, preschoolers need to learn to get along with each other. There's the social emotional piece that's critical to their success later on. Also, the ability to problem solve and to address issues with grit and perseverance. And those are things that children learn in kindergarten, or excuse me, in preschool. And if they don't learn them in preschool, often in kindergarten they experience failure because they're behind academically. And then none of those skills that are important to later success in life pay off for them. And they start labeling themselves as failures and giving up on those persistence and perseverance qualities that are so necessary for success later on.
And Kathy, let me ask you this. And I grew up in an inner city neighborhood, not inner city, but a city neighborhood in Philadelphia. Okay, and it was a post-war neighborhood, and there were 5 billion kids my age, okay, or right around my age. You all know what that's World War II, by the way. Neighborhoods were like. Kathy, do you find that kids have enough social interaction without preschool? Because, you know, my parents, and this is back in the early 50s and throughout my whole life, they would just send, all the parents on the street, they just send the kids outside and they come in for lunch and we'll see you again at dinner. Okay? But we had a lot, that was socializing. Okay, and that was, though we didn't know it, we didn't have words for it, was collaboration, et cetera, et cetera. And I think today, because all that's changed, if I sound like the oldest man on the mountain, okay, but all that has changed. And I think preschool, correct me if I'm wrong, helps to fill that gap. You know, you drive around these days, you don't see kids playing on the street like you did in 1957 or 1962, okay, or 1971. They're not out there playing anymore. And that socialization part is such an important skill, okay, and the things we learn from it. Kathy, do the kids have enough play time to actually learn this? Does preschool help fill that gap as well?
Absolutely. Play is essential to learning. And the things that you learned when you played out on the street and when I played out on the street were cooperation, problem solving, sharing, working through things together, even how to address each other, how to give and take, how to compromise. Children need experiences with other children to learn those absolutely critical skills. And they can learn them on the street like we did, or they can learn them playing board games, or they can learn them in preschool.
Wow. And they don't learn it with video games because they're playing by themselves half the time, or at least seemingly.
Absolutely. And and they're not developing vocabulary while they're playing the video games. They're minus a lot of those skills that you're talking about when they come to kindergarten if they haven't had preschool. But in preschool and also in the Upstart software, the Waterford Early Learning software, social-emotional skills are addressed. And they're critical to the success of children throughout their school and life career.
It's frightening that kids are missing so many of the things that we took for granted. It's amazing.
But you can't blame parents. Yeah. I mean, they are very leery about letting their children play on the street or have play dates at the park without people they know because of the dangers that have been so readily, we are so readily made aware of. I grew up in a rural community, and I think to some extent in rural America there are still experiences for young children. But in urban areas, I think it's very difficult to access those experiences without preschool.
Right, and the challenge, if I may, I just did a show yesterday with the National Rural Education Association. The teachers in rural education try so hard, and a lot of the challenges they have these days, of course, is funding, and the access to broadband, et cetera, which creates a equity gap. Okay, and they're having trouble getting teachers in. It's a vicious cycle, and we want to make rural education equal to all other education, the finest suburban education in the world, however you want to do that. And we can do it, which brings up the point, okay? Kathy, what do you see? We're talking to professional educators here, but they have to get the word out to people. We can't just let it sit. Okay, how do we overcome the barriers? Well, what do you think? Let me ask you, what do you think teachers should do? Now, you're an ex-principal. What do you think educators should do? Are they doing enough? Kathy.
Well, educators can spread the word about the critical necessity of early childhood education, and they can support it themselves. I know in Utah, we've had, Ann already mentioned, we're 50th in funding per pupil funding across the nation, and we didn't have money for preschools. But the kindergarten teachers were willing to actually raise class size in order to fund preschools. The principals were willing to give up a classroom in their school that might have been used for storage or for interventions or for any number of special programs like music or fine arts, but they were willing to give up a classroom for preschool, and then through federal programs, you can fund preschool, and even if the state legislature isn't funding it, and address the needs of especially the poverty children or the subgroups that are at risk and get preschool for them. And it's a cooperative effort among the teachers, the administration, the district that allows you to use the building, and the community itself.
What made them, and I'll ask Kathy, and you can pass it to Ann if you want to, or answer and pass it to Ann. Kathy, well, you just said, the teachers were willing to increase class size. The principals were willing to create space, et cetera. What was it that got them all together that made them willing to do that? In your opinion,
in the experience that I have,
yeah.
I was a Title I director in a school district in Utah, and I just went to the high poverty schools and talked to the principals, and we got them together and discussed what could happen. Someone else, not me, had the vision for preschools. I was still focused on school-aged children at the time. And
mm-hmm.
someone came to me and said, you know, we could save kids before they come to kindergarten. And I liked her vision. And so we just got all the stakeholders together. We went to the community, Chamber of Commerce, and
mm-hmm.
Some businesses and said, could you throw in some funding for some of the materials? So we started on a shoestring with just three preschools, and the very first year we only reached 90 children, and now there are over 1,200 children in this program.
And are you talking about one district, your old district?
Yes, one district.
So start with 90, and now it's 1,200, 12-time
yeah,
growth.
It was just grassroots from the community and the teachers themselves.
And as you go around the country, do you find schools are figuring this out?
We're finding that more and more schools are creating some type of preschool. I think what's unique about what Kathy's doing is, I mean, that's a tremendous number for her to be serving. What you'll find often is you'll hear people say, we serve 30% of our eligible children, right? So eligible
mm-hmm.
children, you know, is a fraction, and then you're serving a fraction of those. Whereas as Kathy is serving a tremendous percentage of available children for pre-K in St. George. So I think it's a pretty big accomplishment, the work that she's doing,
It's a tremendous accomplishment, okay? And, you know, well, I have to ask Kathy, I don't know if you know this, what's the free and reduced lunch rate in St. George schools, which I think is going to astound me, but what is it? Do you know offhand?
47%.
Okay. I was hoping you weren't going to tell me something like 80%. Okay, so I'm 47%.
No, there are schools that are at
100%.
Are 100,
here. I'm sure.
But
always scares me when I ask people to describe their district, usually the first thing they do to describe it is the free and reduced lunch number. And that number, which is scary to me, okay, is usually very, very high. And I'm thrilled to hear 47% ain't bad, I got to tell you. That's a pretty low number, though. It's 47% too high, if you ask me. Okay.
Well, Larry, one of the things that
yeah.
you have to understand about free and reduced lunch figures are that they have to be self-declared by the parents,
mm-hmm.
and they have to come in and apply for free and reduced lunch, and
mm-hmm.
There's a predominant feeling in the state of Utah that you are self-sufficient. And so many families that could qualify for free and reduced lunch don't label themselves.
You guys are self-sufficient. I wonder if that theory holds across the country. And what do you think? That's interesting.
Oh, I think it's an ongoing problem that families don't want to declare or apply. And I think especially for, I mean, we're talking about preschool, but I think especially
yeah.
for older children, when kids get to middle school and high school, those families don't apply even though there's need.
They
and
should
I,
apply.
You know, I mean, 47%, you know, it's I mean, it's one thing to say a number like 47%, but, you know, if you put a face on every one of those children,
yep.
I mean, that's a lot of poverty.
It is. That's what I'm saying. It's 47% too
yeah.
much.
We talk about 1 in 6 children are hungry. So there's a lot of need and pain out there for kids.
There really is. And, you know, you go to St. George, such a pretty community, okay? And my kids grew up in Exeter, New Hampshire, which is a pretty wealthy community, all right, right along the seacoast in New Hampshire where the academy is. And I was astounded to find out that even in Exeter there was a free and reduced lunch rate, okay, and there was a charity set up, as people know, to supply kids with food over the weekends. This is in a very upscale town.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it's everywhere in the country. And the one thing we can do, A, we can supply food, and B, we have to encourage that this is going to, if we don't nip it in the bud, okay, with products like Waterford produces, okay, we pay the price at the other end. Okay, it's that simple. And you said at the beginning, Kathy, a prison or preschool, there's your new bumper sticker. Okay. It's just astounding. It's just unbelievable. We got to replicate the pockets of success. Ladies, thank you so much. Kathy, you're really something.
Well, thank you. This has been really fun.
Well, it's been fun for me too, inkoilgrandma@gmail.com. You're just amazing. Okay, you are. And your career was amazing, and I know you're still doing great work out there. And Anna's always, she's got her nose to the grindstone 24/7 for Waterford, right, Anne?
I do, every minute.
You do? Every minute. I know you do. Okay, say hi to everybody out there. Kathy, keep it up. And one suggested, become an upwinder.
Thank you.
Okay.
I'll try and do that from now on.
Do it. And thank you both very much. You guys have a great day. Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Larry.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Kathy Peterson, she's great. Okay, and my pal Ann Brown. Waterford at waterford.org. Okay, their upstart program. Okay, what can I say? You're an educator. Okay, get your parents cranking. Elect the right people. It's election time. Okay, whoever they may be. All right, it's a bipartisan statement, by the way. All right, we're going to archive the show education-talkradio.org and tweet it out over at EduTalkRadio. My name is Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Thank you for listening.